This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Breaking news today was, and was expected. I mean, yes, let's talk about it as breaking news, but it was something that was expected. It was something that was particularly in the conversation of so many people. We raised it here also last week about how would Janusz Waluś, how would he, if given parole, and of course sent home, deported to Poland, how would he serve the remaining of his prison sentence? Even though, of course, on parole, he wouldn't be able to because, of course, the Polish constitution, the Polish legislative framework would not allow for that. There's no way that South Africa would tell or indicate to them how one of their citizens should be, you know, observed and or treated within that particular country. So the argument being that if Janusz Waluś was deported, if he was sent back to Poland, he would ultimately be a free man. And of course, Janusz Waluś's lawyers are basically asking and have asked that he, of course, be sent home, suggesting, you know, that also his life would be at risk here and that, of course, the state would then have to take some responsibility for him here in this particular country purely because of the sort of risk that he would have on his life for the kind of atrocity you will remember that he did way, way, way back in 1993. What was it? 10 April 1993, I think. 10 April 1993, I think that's the date. Chris Hani was shot in the driveway to his home. Well, we're going to pick up that conversation right now with Matthews Parks, COSATU Parliamentary Coordinator. He is already here. Isaac Moselani, family law attorney. We're trying to get him into the conversation. We're pursuing that also. So, like I said to you, breaking news today was that Chris Hani's killer, Janusz Waluś, will not be deported to Poland and will serve his parole in South Africa. If you didn't know that, well, that's the latest on that particular issue. Now, there's been growing calls, of course, for Chief Justice Raymond Zondo's ruling for the release of Janusz Waluś to be reversed. That, of course, is an emotional call, that's a sentimental call that you've seen from various quarters, including COSATU, the SACP, and a lot of other people asking and saying what can be done, what needs to be done, because obviously, like Cyril Ramaphosa said, he was also disappointed with that particular judgment. But, of course, there is criticism of the judgment, and there is disappointment in the judgment, but that does not necessarily mean there is criticism and disappointment in the judiciary. There's a difference particularly there. And, of course, some of the legal experts making that very, very clear as we went along last week. So, on Saturday, members of the SACP, ANC and COSATU, the Tripartite Alliance, were demonstrating outside the Khayelitsha Magistrates Court, calling, of course, for this decision to be reversed. I don't think you're going to see that happening because, of course, one is it is a constitutional court judgment. So therein lies already a sense of where the decision comes from. You pretty much have to have your ducks in a row, pretty much have to have your ducks, pretty much in order to begin to challenge that. Yes, it's of course, it can be challenged. People do make mistakes. All judgments are not, you know, left to their own. There are decisions that can be taken and or appeal and or sometimes reversed. But in this particular case, I don't necessarily think that any organization is going to stand up to the call and ask for that particular judgment to be reversed. I don't particularly think so. I have my reasons for that. But, of course, one can be disappointed, one can be critical, and one can, of course, begin to do things that illustrate how disappointed you are. Let me bring Matthews Parks from COSATU, the parliamentary coordinator, and Isaac Moselani, the legal analyst, into the conversation. Matthews Parks, welcome to Power 98.7. How are you, Brute?
Good evening. Hi. How's it? Thanks for having me.
Sure, Matthew. Isaac, how are you, man?
Well, thanks to you, Denzel.
I'm good, man, Isaac. Welcome. Welcome both to you. So let's start with the tricameral. Remember way back then, Matthew, the tricameral system.
Wrong adjective, please. Wrong adjective.
Wow. You know, well. You know, there were days like that. Hey, and never should we return, Matthew. The tripartite system. COSATU, the SACP, and the ANC. I mean, you know, I'd use the word pissed off. You know, really. And I'm not sure if you were surprised at it. You know, at some point, there something was going to give around this particular, you know, call. And you know, I was beginning to look at all the sort of judgments in over time and his appeals and his various appeals and his applications for parole. And even I understood that at some point, it's got to reach the Constitutional Court because he was going up the ladder to this particular, you know, court, and we saw it coming. And so I too was one of those that thought at some particular time, at some particular instance, it's going to happen, even though one might not particularly like the decision. Are you one of those, Matthew?
No, I think all sober people must be. Look, I think the first thing is that Chris Hani was a beloved figure for South Africans, not just for the ANC or COSATU or the party. I think we can all remember where we were on that particular Saturday morning when he was murdered, you know. And I think all of us felt of him, they represented the best of all our virtues, not just as a liberation movement, but as a country, you know, that we all looked at him as this is a future leader of the country. And symbolically, it was a painful blow to lose him. I think we were all relieved how quickly South Africa pulled together under Madiba's leadership, how Madiba, the government, that and the apartheid regime worked quickly to, and many others, including his neighbor, a white woman, to apprehend this chap, Yanis Walus, how quickly the police managed to find this flight, Lewis, etc. And I think, Denzel, you're right. I mean, because something about parole law indicates that if you go into prison, eventually you'll be released. Unless you're released.
Yeah, there comes a time.
It's inevitable. We don't like it. And international, not just South Africa, international across the world, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but life normally means he is in prison. I think the fact that he was in prison since 1993 was long, and I was surprised how he hadn't gotten out before. But having said it, it's still a bitter pill to swallow because it's bringing up old wounds. And we saw today how Chris's grave was desecrated by some hooligans, idiots trying to provoke. Exactly what Yanis Walus, when he killed Chris Hani, wanted to provoke the breakdown of South Africa, civil war. But it's a difficult thing. And look, you're right. You can't do anything beyond the Constitutional Court. Sure, you could try your luck. You could try to ask him for a review. But I think we're being unfair to Judge Zondo to say this is a Judge Zondo decision. It was a unanimous court decision.
Yeah.
I don't think based upon our laws, because the judges can only interpret the law. They can't write the law. And the law does say at this point you will be released. Doesn't mean we like it. It's a bit of a pill to sell. Just like you wouldn't be happy if somebody murdered a child. You never wanted to be out of prison. I think the Hani family is right to feel aggrieved. Who you know, felt a painful blow the loss of Chris. But I think for us, when you're raising the issue, and it's interesting to hear Home Affairs saying he must serve his parole in South Africa. I think that's the right position to take. Because parole can still be very stringent. It can be under house arrest, community service, etc. So I think whatever we can do, we should apply that. And I don't think we should be deporting him to Poland, because you've seen the media reports in Poland. He's treated like a right-wing white supremacist hero. So why would you want him to go to Poland so he can be fed about some right-wing fanatics and kind of basically mock South Africa's pain? So I think we should keep him here and keep him here for the rest of his days and make sure that every single day of his life he is under scrutiny and he feels some sort of consequence for what he did, albeit not enough of a consequence, to be honest.
Well, Matthew, that decision already being made that he's going to serve, you know, his parole out in this particular country. Matthew, I'm going to put you back to Tumelo. There's an issue with the line, Matthew, and I'd really, really like the conversation to be, you know, audible to our listeners as well. I think it's an important conversation, so we're just going to try to fix Matthew's line. Isaac, on the same issue, Isaac, of the Constitutional Court, of parole eventually, you know, inevitable at some particular point, this issue also at some particular point getting to the Constitutional Court also. So how did you see this particularly playing out, Isaac?
I think this matter can be, you know, looked at in twofold. Mm. And the first fold is the one where Matthew was talking about regarding the social aspect of the release of Yanis, and how society felt about it. Mm. If I submit that if you are a political party that is part of parliament and has been in parliament and making laws for a long time, you shouldn't be surprised. You shouldn't come out and be surprised that Constitutional Court would say that the decision of the minister was irrational, because you know the laws which you passed yourself in 97, signed in 98. Mm. So why would you be surprised if the Constitutional Court, which has to work with what they have, why would you be surprised of the decision that they take?
And hence Matthew says, you know, considering every single pointer in this, you know, at some point it was going to happen because the law will dictate, you know, a particular way that is going to work, and also over time, time is also going to lapse, and that also is going to be an indicator of a particular decision that's going to be made.
Yeah, I mean, which brings me to my twofold, the fact that it's the law, you know, the law must be applied in general application. Obviously, there will be limitations there and there. There will be limitations imposed as to why a certain general rule should not be taken. But after this man has served that much in prison, can we make an argument in court and say, no, he should not be released because he's a habitual criminal? If you have the evidence to say that. So I think to reiterate what Matthew said, we're being unfair on the Constitutional Court, which I think that Twitter has really, really harmed our people with respect to information. I blame social media, I blame popular people who have a lot of following and who make seem as if you are the Chief Justice, everything you say goes. We have a lot of judgments where previous Chief Justice were in the minority. If you remember the last case of Banywa versus Minister of Home Affairs, if you remember that case, former Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng was in the minority. So this assumption that the Chief Justice in South Africa has all the power has been seriously perpetuated by certain people who have occupied good media spaces, and they've actually literally harmed South Africans by not providing full information, by making it seem that that man would not be subject to laws that they passed, the ANC passed in 98. I mean, you see the reaction. What time, when did the judgment was made? When did the widow, you know, Chris Hani's wife speak on the media?
Yeah, Mrs. Hani.
Mrs. Hani speak on the media. When did that her reaction spark on social media and polarize everything? And then when did the SACP and any other political party in parliament react? You understand that certain things are just reactionary based on polarized view, and most of those views being uninformed instead of teaching our people what is happening. But I understand where they stand in politics. But that position is morally repugnant. That position is disingenuous. They passed these laws of the Correctional Service Act in 1998. And they should know what it does. But in any case, everybody knows, because if you ask any person on the street as to, according to you, when does a person qualify for parole, even if they don't quote the relevant section, someone will tell you, well, if somebody has served half of his years, he qualifies for parole. And or they know that even some certain judgments would impose
would say, look, you are sentenced for 20 years, but you're only allowed to serve 2 years of that period.
Mm.
We've seen this a lot of time. That is done in terms of the law that has been passed by the country.
Mm.
If political parties, particularly those in government, have an issue with this, they know what to do.
Mm.
They've got the numbers.
Mm.
If they combine, they'll do what they feel. But at the end of the day, you pass legislation which are of general application. Yes, you create exceptional circumstances why that person may not qualify. But since today, we've never heard any reason why he does not qualify for that, except the fact that, well, the thing that he committed...
Emotion and sentiment. Mm.
Yeah, like, you know, he committed murder at a period where we could have had a civil war.
Mm.
No one is disputing all of that.
Mm.
No one is certainly disputing all of that. But how does that have to do with the law?
Mm.
The law that our government knows about.
Isaac, so I have a question for you, Isaac. Janusz Walus first became eligible for parole in 2005 already. That's the kind of scenario that we actually have here. 2005 already was the first time that he would have become, you know, eligible for parole. And that shows you, you know, the kind of activity that's either happened, you know, within the correctional spaces and or with various ministers over time, or whether he complied or didn't comply. The question then that you're raising is about the laws. And the one law that applies to this particular one is that, you know, he was initially sentenced to death, but of course it was converted to life imprisonment after capital punishment was ruled unconstitutional. Are we even having that conversation at the moment when you talk about let's go and look at the laws? Because, you know, when I look at the laws in general, is what would you then be changing? Because ultimately, you cannot change the laws in regards to specific people and or specific incidences where, you know, you want the punishment to be more for the crime. What, you know, I'm just trying to make a distinction of what element of the law would we be talking about? Would we be talking about, you know, a conversation that begins to bring back that element of, you know, a referendum and you know, capital punishment? And or is there something that says regarding these particular types of criminality, these are the things that should be done? Where are you on the legal conversation there?
So the legal conversation has always been applying the law. You know, as legal practitioners, we apply the law. Yes, we can take certain matters to court when we want to improve the law, when we believe that the law needs to be updated. We've seen that when Makwanyane is the reason why those who were sentenced to the death were ended up saved and converted to life sentence, because Makwanyane looked at the constitution, believed he had the right to life, which is absolute. He went to court.
Yeah.
It changed. I think, and I've said this before on air, that our democracy is maturing.
Mm.
If you think 2005 and up until now, you realize how many laws which exist, even post-apartheid, but are gradually being developed to suit this current generation or society.
Mm.
You will realize that our democracy is maturing, that people are starting... You know, like legal practitioners are different. The legal practitioners back then are different to those now. The political atmosphere is different from in 2005 and now, you know. So because our democracy is busy maturing, you are going to have situations where people even never thought that other people have access to those particular laws and they could use them to their benefit.
Mm.
So to answer your question again, this means that, especially in public spaces like your radio, where people still tune in, like your social media, it is important that the starting point be the legislations or laws or case law applied.
Mm.
If we start on the interpretation of law and then start having discussions when we critique those justifications, then we have a way in which we can improve other people's understanding. But even those that did not understand, perhaps the person, once they have sufficient information or criticism, they may be able to come forward and say, this is how I see things. Like, for instance, if people would say, if someone is convicted of treason, that person should not qualify for parole whatsoever. That justification... Because right now, for example, he's not going to be deported. He's going to be in the country for a long time. Who's going to provide for him? He's been in jail for a long time. So the state's responsibility to take care of him. He probably does. Obviously does not have where he lives. And so looking at his situation where he's not a South African, I say there should be laws in which that deal with those kind of people. Because I am sure even the next 10 years, those kind of people would actually exist. So if you are amending the constitution, I mean, people are even talking about, look, if a person has committed murder, let's bring back the death penalty. But it's quite difficult because you would have to first start arguing against the decision to abolish the death penalty. But the discussion, if you see it on social media, people don't start the conversation with that particular legislation of S versus Makwanyane. They don't start there. Looking at the justification, why did the court believe that the right to life is absolute? Why aren't we having a conversation on the judgment, then trickle down all other issues that relate to the judgment and critique and help, and perhaps maybe may assist in building a reason why that decision should be changed. But if we are not going to discuss the law as we should, we're going to have a problem in future, because misinformation is currently dangerous. Even the whole issue of bail system in this country, there are a lot of people that don't know anything about why should people get bail.
Well, I'm in conversation with Matthew Parks, COSATU Parliamentary Coordinator, and Isaac Moselani, the legal analyst. And we're really talking about a story that broke today also. And I'm not sure why we're using the terminology breaking news around it, because it's something that really, really was expected, where... Chris Hani's killer, Janusz Walusz, suggested will not be deported to Poland and he will serve his parole in South Africa. Of course, when you consider what parole is and how parole conditions are going to apply, considering also that the Polish government and the Polish system would not impose parole conditions on Janusz Walusz, then obviously it was one of those conversations that kind of made sense that he would serve his parole here in South Africa. Alternatively, then he would be a free man and sent, of course, to Poland, where he would ultimately be a free man and his parole conditions would not apply. Basil in Boksburg. Basil?
Hi, Denzel.
Yes.
I just want to comment, Matthew.
Sure. You want to comment him?
Commend him. For maintaining a cool head on this.
Yeah.
And a very insightful commentary on legal aspect of this case. Look, my biggest issue with this thing is that are we saying that therefore the law should be applied individually? Or what are we saying exactly? So we must look at Basil because he's nothing, therefore we must throw the book at him. And if it's so-and-so, a minister or whoever, then we can draw a rules that governs the minister. Because for me, it doesn't make sense at all. If the guy is yes, what he had done, as your legal expert has said, it almost plunged us into civil war.
Almost derailed our democracy.
That's not a legal argument. I think we are trading in a dangerous area if we start to say this law must apply to this one and not to this one. It becomes very, very dangerous. Law must not have eyes, as the lady law has it. So it must not. What applies to Basil must what applies to Denzel and what applies to the president and what applies to the minister. So it must not have eyes that it can be able to see who it applying to now. So for me, your two legal experts, I hope that most of people can be able to understand this. I love the point as my parting shot that your legal expert was saying that for us, if people can be educated and to understand that it's not Judge Zondo's decision. Mm. It's a legal issue. It's just a pure legal issue. If our politicians, they act as surprised, because I think they always are surprised about many things, but they're the ones who say this is the best constitution. Mm. And when we apply the very same constitution, they act surprised. So I don't understand what is the hullabaloo, what it's all about. Mm. Honestly, I don't.
So Basil, the question to me is, in light of your question where you were saying you hope that the law does not begin to apply to individuals, and you know, the two instances that I would raise with you where we were beginning to tread on very, very thin ice and constitutionally also create issues for ourselves, was the issue of medical parole, where we begin to see two individuals, you know, that we have seen in the political space granted political parole in instances where it's really, really debatable sometimes whether they should even have been granted that particular parole. And that sometimes is an argument where, you know, the law is made for some and the law does not apply to the others. I get your point there, Basil. Thank you so much, Brood.
Thank you.
Golden Miles Budu in Nigel. Golden?
Good evening, Denzel, my brother.
Sure, Brood.
Once again, here, the politicians and the executives are abusing their power, their authority, and their abusing office.
Mm.
You see, I was released from prison in 1991, and I've been fighting this battle whilst I was in prison myself in 1985. We started this organization. Mm. We've got tens of foreigners who are told that, look, you qualify to be released, but you won't be released because you will have to be deported immediately when you get released, and you can go and do your parole somewhere out of the country, Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Mozambique, and so on.
Mm.
And I find it very interesting now that we are told Walus will have to serve his 2 years remaining parole in the country.
Mm.
Doesn't he have a choice? Or can't he just be kicked out of this country? And the 2 years that they're talking about, he served it somewhere there where he goes,
sure,
whether he's going to be supervised or not. But now if they do this to Walus, then they will have to do this to all the other foreigners that comes after Walus. Will they do that?
Golden, I'm pretty much aware of the fact, Golden, also that, of course, the Polish government has no responsibility to our legal system and or to our constitution as well on the suggestion of parole and the kind of conditions we could apply. The fact that we would deport him would ultimately make him a free man, and we cannot then subscribe and or dictate to the Polish system, the government, legislators in Poland, how they need to deal with one of their own citizens. That, of course, you know, is an international conversation, and we'd not be able to do that, Golden.
Denzel, what is this 2 year remaining parole of Walus? Walus, according to the book, he should have been released 15 years ago.
Golden, I'm going to leave it there. Golden, I think I get you, Golden, on that one. Moses in Rustenburg, before I go back to Matthew. Moses?
Hey, how are you, Denzel?
I'm good, Brood. How are you, man?
No, I'm good, my man. I'm actually a bit happy about this, the new dynamics that actually coming about as far as this issue of Janus Walus is concerned.
Sure, man.
Yes, this issue now is start now making the case of Janus Walus a bit special to be for us now as the government to create this Janus clause, you see, whereby this case is now becoming more special. Just you actually said it. You said a whole lot of things that it affect. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and there's nothing that I can that I will dispute about. Even other people who actually mentioned these regulations and so on.
Mm.
So what my view is that we should actually make this Janus clause because we cannot allow Janus Walus to go and spend and be a free man in his country there in Poland. Then he must spend these 2 years here, and there should be a clause that is special for him. And any this also it create more space for us now if maybe there will be other foreign people who are going to commit such a crime in our country. They should be that they should be treated through that special clause that Janusz Waluzi is going to, should be treated as it is.
Yes. Sure. Moses in Rustenburg. Yes. Well, let me go to back to Matthew Parks. Matthew, the Sobukwe clause, Matthew. I'm thinking the Janusz Waluz clause. The Sobukwe clause. I mean, you can comment on some of these things, Matthew, but a lot of ground has been covered since we started with you, Matthew. You want to pick up on a lot of these issues?
Yeah. So look, I mean, I think maybe for me, 3 points. I think one is that, you know, this is a painful moment for all of us.
Mm.
And I think, Janusz Waluz is still remaining parole because parole is part of your sentence.
Mm.
It's part of your integration, unfortunately, back into society in this instance.
Mm. Mm.
But perhaps so that he must do it here, because I think we don't want to see him being prematurely released out of parole, going to Poland, and being treated like some sort of right-wing supremacist hero. You know, that'll be an insult. That'll be a bitter pill. Mm. But I think we should also be honest with ourselves that once he does complete his parole, because at some stage he would complete it, he'll be free to do whatever he wants, and chances are he would go to Poland.
Mm.
And there'll be nothing we could do about that, you know, because we are a democracy.
And that, Matthew, is an important point. We need to be honest with ourselves, because that reality is also going to come to us sometime down the road.
It'll come to us in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years' time, whatever, because parole is not a long... It's a kind of the transition part out of your final sentence, you know? But I think for me, what's the more critical thing is, one is that we need to say, are we happy with our existing sentencing laws?
Mm.
And to be honest, I think for me, maybe this might be the best time to have that discussion.
Mm.
It's reactive, yes, definitely. We're guilty of that as human beings all the time.
Mm.
But are we comfortable with the sentences that we give to people who rape children, who murder women, who beat people all the time?
Mm.
Oscar Pistorius, when he was convicted for killing his girlfriend, society was not happy with the sentence, correctly so.
Mm.
When Arthur Brown robbed pensioners of money and got out after, 2 years, whatever it was,
yeah,
we were not happy.
Mm.
I mean, you're right to raise the example that Janusz Waluz was eligible for parole in 2005, and that would have been a huge blow to a very nascent democracy at that stage. We're only 11 years into democracy, you know? So we're literally saying, for certain categories, we should have a bit more stringent sentencing criteria. I know judges don't like it.
Mm.
They want a bit of flexibility to look at context, etc. That's fine.
Mm.
But surely we should be saying, for certain crimes, we need to do better to the victims.
Mm.
Because it shouldn't be right for a woman to go down the street and within 18 months you see the person who raped her walking along the street doing what he did.
And she has to face that perpetrator out in the street, released, yes.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, for me, the other thing also, Denzel, that we love Chris. Everybody remembers the world when he died.
Mm.
But have we done justice to what he stood for, what he lived and died for? I don't think we have done.
Now there's a totally different conversation, you know, Matthew, that one should pick up, in a different conversation, because have we done justice to the likes of Chris Hani and so many others that, you know, would have then paid with their lives for the kind of scenario where we find ourselves 20, 28, 29 years later in this country? Matthew, let me ask you this question, Matthew. Would it have made a difference if Janusz Waluz, for example, would have been charged with treason and a sentencing then would have been, you know, maybe, you know, my understanding, I don't know, I'm not the legal person here, Isaac is. Would a charge of treason, because of the severity of, we talk to it, you know, almost capsizing our democracy, you know, almost, you know, derailing somebody who could potentially, if the years had gone by, seen himself as president in this particular country, because Chris Hani was as popular as he was and also would have had political ambitions as well. And you know, nobody could take that away from him, that there could have been a possibility that he could have been a president of this country one day. The issue of treason, and that maybe we got it wrong right there in the beginning. What do you feel about that?
Yeah. So, look, I think yes or no. I think yes, you know, treason conviction, and definitely was treason, because it wasn't just about murdering the individual. It was plunging the country to civil war where many others would have been lost, etc. Mm.
And Clive W. Lewis says that. Clive W. Lewis says that's the reason why they killed him. They wanted to plunge the country into absolute disaster.
And we were fortunate to have the leadership of, you know, Madiba and de Klerk. I don't know, I want to say that, but collectively society across political spectrums rallied together to avoid that kind of apocalypse. So I think you're right. A treason charge would have carried a, you know, heavy sense more than the individual murder of an individual person.
Mm.
You know, that might have brought an additional life sentence. They might have said, well, okay, they can be served maybe, but I think unlikely consecutively, because normally they don't do that. They give you one life sentence, but sometimes you can be lucky and the judge can be particularly harsh, like with court. But even then, you saw that after 20 years or so, the man with his 300 years of sentence was out. So I think in reality, it would have made a long difference in the law. And Yanis Voloshin, no matter what, how many charges he was convicted of, it was inevitable he was going to come out if he... there's nothing could have done in that regard.
Well, let's go back to Isaac. Isaac Moselani?
Yes, Kenzo. I think, you know, you hit it right. You hit the nail right on the middle spot about discussions around sentencing. And yes, several issues such as gender-based violence, such as this case of Yanis, should invoke conversations on sentencing in the country. It shouldn't be that we should create law specific for a certain person, because those laws might not, the Constitutional Court may decide that those laws are unconstitutional.
Yeah, they wouldn't see the light of the day too with the Constitutional Court here.
So I guess maybe we need to start with the amendment of the Constitution. Hence I'll say, whatever conversation we'll have, everything boils down to the politicians in Parliament. Those are the ones who are in charge. If they have a problem with certain sections of the Constitution, if they want to impose limitations on the right to life for certain reason, they should go back to the Constitution. They should go back to all the international international policies that they've ratified, which prevent them from amending the Constitution the way they would see it benefit the people of South Africa. We need to have a serious conversation in this country regarding punishment as a whole. I mean, the only time we have seen a thorough discussion on punishment is when you're doing second year in law, when you have to decide and discuss different types of punishment and why they should be imposed. But you are limited on what you're provided by the law. So if we want to develop the law at a way in which it affects the Constitution, those who are responsible in amending the Constitution should start there. Because remember, whenever we approach the court, we never say that the Constitution is invalid. Which is what that case of people who wanted to, foreign nationals who wanted to study or practice law in South Africa, they were gunning to change the Constitution at the Constitutional Court, which is quite odd. Those decisions are political decisions. So we sit here as analyzers of the Constitution. Whatever idea that I come across, that idea should be in line with Section 2 of the Constitution, which says that any law which is not consistent with the Constitution would be invalid. So the conversation about changing our laws would start with first amending the Constitution. And I think that at this current moment, if, for example, Parliament amends the Constitution and it is public, we are going to ask questions such as, why hasn't the land issue, Section 25, amended? Why did we have to hold a referendum? Because you have the power. We voted you in as in terms of our representative democracy policies. So I think at this point in time, politicians don't want to be honest with people. I think they should be honest with people to say, instead of talking in the media, we actually have powers to bring an amendment of the Constitution to be debated in Parliament. And a lot of us will tune in and watch. We will see which political parties are hesitant to amend the Constitution to suit South Africans. And we would, you know, be vocal on our decisions on the ballot paper. And anyone else who tries to tell us anything would say, but we saw you. You refuse to amend 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Your political party refused to amend 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 when you had powers and you did not. So
and judges and magistrates look at the law and are guided by the law when they make these decisions, even about particular sentencing, because you know there's almost a guidebook to what they also can do.
We don't live in an authoritarian state where a particular person in a position of power can do as they please. There are checks and balances. The Magistrates Court is quite more strict because the Magistrates Court is a creature of statute. And so it is supposed, it's subjected to precedence, it's subjected to laws that have been drafted in terms of the Magistrate Court Act, the Criminal Amendment Law Act, Criminal Procedure Act, all those things, they are subjected, the magistrate is subjected to that. The High Court, which has inherent jurisdiction, whatever they do has to be in line with the Constitution. So the higher court, up to Supreme Court of Appeal, up to the Constitutional Court, they are subject to the Constitution. They may develop the law, but they need to develop the law in line with the Constitution. So when we start these conversations, we should start with the Constitution. If we want to amend the Constitution, then let's talk about amending the Constitution. Let's have a thorough discussion on why certain acts, certain criminal convictions deserve a harsher penalty. Should we bring back torture? Should we bring back capital punishment? We have signed. We have a constitution. So we would need to thoroughly, and when I mean we, I mean the politicians, would thoroughly have to table a proper amendment where if we it means we leave certain treaties, let us do that. But however, you realize that when the constitution was made, these politicians wanted to protect even themselves and their families in future, so that any political party that ever become in power, it should not use its power to abuse the people, to violate the lives of the people. So the problem is the constitution was done by people who have suffered trauma and not gone through counseling. And therefore, most of the decisions that they made or the laws that they made would look like laws where they're trying to prevent what happened to them to happen in future. Well, that would have not been the case, because the Constitution itself would continue to progress. The Constitution itself would continue to mature. And the people that are governed by that Constitution would begin to be open their eyes to say that, no. We want the right to life not to be absolute.
Sure.
We want the right to dignity, to this and this and that. We want the issues of bail in terms of the Constitution be amended because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We've seen even politicians come and talk about bail, which is disingenuous, because they shouldn't be telling us that the laws of bail need to be changed. They should go back and change them. So those, when it comes to politicians, the first question should be asked, why haven't you amended the Constitution?
Sure.
That's what we should be asking politicians.
Isaac, let me give Matthew. Matthew, you've got the last word.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, Matthew, I can hear you.
Look, I mean, yeah, this is it's a painful moment, but I think for us, if we want to make the best of a moment, if we really want to do honor to not just to Chris, but to many other victims, then we really do need to review our sentencing and our parole laws. To be honest, they are far too lenient, not because Chris was a hero of ours, but because victims deserve better across society. Women and children, many people who have lost loved ones deserve better than to see people who have committed horrific crimes being released from prison after 10 years, 15 years, or even 20 years, you know. Certain people in society just simply have forfeited the right to live with people, but they need to amend laws. We need to have a thorough discussion about it, because I think clearly the system is far too lenient. But I think we need to have a conversation about the ideals Chris lived and fought and died for, and how we have really let him down on so many regards, you know. That we still have millions of people living in informal areas. There are millions of people without job, without access to decent sanitation or water or electricity or schools. And I think if we want to really do honor to his memory, that's the best thing we can do, to see how we rebuild a society, come together as we did in 1994, see how to really transform this country. Because we did well on many fronts, but we've also done quite badly on many fronts too, especially in the past decade or so.
Matthew Parks, Kusatu Parliamentary Coordinator, thank you so much, Brood, for joining me here on Power Perspective.
Cool, thank you.
Thank you. Isaac Mosalani, legal analyst. Thanks for your contribution, mate. It's really been an awesome conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Isaac Mosalani, legal analyst, and of course, Matthew Parks, COSATU Parliamentary Coordinator, chatting to us there.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.